Before we call item J, I'd like to call on Presiding Judge Dean Stout to say a few words.
Thank you, Chief Justice and members of the Judicial Council. If I could have perhaps Justice Kaye step forward with very able staff, Bobby Welling and Diane Nunn, if she's here, Director for the Center of Children, Families, and the Court. Before Justice Kaye begins his presentation to the Council, I would like to take a few minutes to note that yesterday this Council selected Justice Kaye as one of two recipients of the 2013 Richard D. Huffman Justice for Children and Families Award, and to comment on his significant contributions to advancing justice for children and families in California. Although Justice Kaye is a jurist of many accomplishments in a wide variety of areas, this award was conferred in honor and with admiration for his pioneering work, first in judicial education on domestic violence issues, and then as chair of the Domestic Violence Practice and Procedures Task Force since 2005. In 1989, Justice Kaye planned the very first judicial education course on domestic violence, entitled Domestic Violence, the Crucial Role of the Criminal Court Judge, and has continued to work in the field of domestic violence. His groundbreaking task force report led to countless educational programs featuring the task force guidelines, changes to the rules of court, creation of new publication and bench tools, and citations in appellate cases. His recent work with the Task Force on Firearm Relinquishment and Reducing Lethality is critically important to court and public safety. Justice Kaye took a leadership role in domestic violence matters before their far-reaching significance was even begun to be recognized. He understood the effects of domestic violence not only on public safety, but on the needs of families and children. He approached the topic from an interdisciplinary perspective. What he understood early on, we know now, has long-term significance, from the immediate effects on children who live in violent homes to the lingering and long-term results for adults who grew up in those homes. As a task force member, I was continually amazed at Justice Kaye's excellent grasp of complex aspects of this topic, his insights and knowledge of the trial courts and the rulemaking process, and his incredible, tireless work ethic. I am proud to have been a member of the task force under his leadership, and I would respectfully ask that you join me now in recognizing Justice Kaye for his extraordinary contributions to the administration of justice for families and children in California. Chief, thank you very much for indulging me there. And I would also like to take a moment to really commend Diane Nunn and her staff, especially lead attorney Bobby Welling, to the task force for their truly outstanding work.
Thank you. And before you begin, Justice Kaye and Bobby, I wanted to also add my personal congratulations. I remember when you started this in 2005, and I remember the dedication. And I won't repeat what Judge Stout has said, but I will say that under the leadership of Justice Kaye and your knowledge of all branch issues, it was just refreshing to know when you would speak on what was policy, that was for counsel, what was legislation, that was for the legislature, and really what the task force was to do. And Bobby Welling support through all that, and your staff was incredible in how you brought us together and gave us the information and moved us along for many years to protect families and children and the public. And I know that, Justice Kaye, you did this when you were retired, when you have other things going on. So much gratitude for all of your efforts in making California a safer, better place.
Well, I'm very moved, and I hardly recognize the person that Dean described, and really it's 90% or more of the credit belongs to Diane Nunn and Bobby and the others on our staff, without which nothing would have happened. Well, Dean actually covered many of the things that I'm about to say, but it's mercifully short. Chief Justice, Justice Baxter, council members, thank you for giving me this opportunity to present the final implementation report of the Domestic Violence Practice and Procedures Task Force. As part of an effort to streamline its committee and task force structure, the council directed the Domestic Violence Task Force to submit a report in August of 2013 after referring remaining items on its annual agenda to other committees or groups and conclude its business by September 1st, 2013. You have that report. First, I would like to express my appreciation to the Chief and to the Council for the honor and privilege of serving as a task force chair since its appointment in 2005. It has been one of the most meaningful and important experiences of my judicial career. The task force members, including at one point you, Chief, have served with great distinction and have made many individual contributions in the administration of justice and domestic violence cases throughout years of service. I would like to thank each and every member, both past and present, for their excellent work. I'm proud to serve with him on this important task force. The task force was appointed in September 2005 in response to an Attorney General's report sharply critical of the courts and other justice system entities. In February 2008, the Council approved the task force's comprehensive report containing 139 suggested guidelines and practices. The task force submitted its report after conducting public hearings, requests for comment, and numerous fact-finding meetings. The Chief Justice then revised the task force charge to include implementation of the guidelines and practices, integration of those suggestions into judicial education, and continuing guidance in this important subject matter area. Since 2008, in partnership with the CEJR Governing Committee, the Violence Against Women Educational Project Planning Committee, advisory committees, and other AOC divisions, the task force has completed what I believe to be an impressive list of tasks and projects. The task force initiated the CCPOR, California Courts Protective Order Registry, a restraining and protective order database accessible to local courts on a statewide basis and to law enforcement, and has continued to support its employment so far in 30 courts. Since 2008, with the assistance of CEJR and VAWEP, we conducted 191 domestic violence-related workshops or programs concerning criminal law, family law, juvenile dependency and delinquency, elder abuse, and interdisciplinary topics. Of the 191 workshops and programs, most were live. Several were designed for assigned judges. Many were delivered to local courts. Some were broadcast or online, and others were local information gathering events for trial courts and justice partners. The task force recommended and the council adopted two rules of court, one on firearm relinquishment in criminal matters and one on domestic violence education. In partnership with the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee, the task force has developed a consensus draft rule on firearm relinquishment in family and juvenile law matters. This is a work in progress. The task force considered and assisted in the revision of numerous domestic violence court forms. We supported and guided the development and publication of bench guides and tools. Finally, the task force sponsored several court roundtables to discuss emerging questions of practice and procedure affecting DV cases, most notably in the area of lethality and risk assessment. I would like to turn now to three recommendations in the task force report and urge the council to accept this report and adopt the proposed recommendations. The task force recommends that the Judicial Council request the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee to continue to be responsible for the proposed rule on firearms relinquishment in juvenile and family law cases, developed as a consensus draft by the advisory committee and the task force. Request the Violence Against Women Educational Project Planning Committee to be responsible for the remaining items on the task force's annual agenda that relate to technical assistance, education, bench tools, publications, distance learning, and the continued rolling out of California Courts Protective Order Registry. Request the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee, in conjunction with VAWEP and in consultation with other advisory committees, recommend a future process, hopefully a continuing one, to address ongoing and emerging issues in court practice and procedure in criminal and civil domestic violence cases. The issue of domestic violence continues to be a topic of great significance to the judicial branch and to public safety. The task force members believe that maintaining an ongoing entity or process to submit recommendations to the council in this subject matter area is critical. Again, thank you. I'm grateful to have had the opportunity to serve on the council, the courts, and the public as chair of the Domestic Violence Practice and Procedure Task Force. It's been a great privilege. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Justice Kaye.
Chief, this is Doug Miller.
Go ahead, Justice Miller.
I can't raise my hand is raised.
Just jump in. Go ahead.
I would like to personally thank Justice Kaye for this report and for his long and dedicated service to the judicial branch of chair of the Domestic Violence Task Force and all of the many other things that are too long to list that he's done during his stellar career. And again, I'd like to join with all of you and congratulate him on the award that he was provided yesterday and congratulate him again for all that he's done in that regard. But I did want to just take just a moment and speak to the third recommendation regarding the ongoing process to address domestic violence in the future. I wanted to first echo Justice Kaye's observations that, in my opinion, domestic violence has been extremely important and a continuing concern, as we all know, to the council, to local courts, and to the public. Domestic violence is one of those prime examples of a crossover issue. It fits within many different legal subjects and substantive areas. And it also kind of has its own unique body of law and procedures that guide the administrative system of justice in these types of cases. But we know from the original task force report and recommendations submitted in 2008 that the proper administration of justice in these cases is critical. And again, as anyone who served in those departments know, it truly, truly can save lives. So I'm hoping the council will adopt all three of the recommendations. And again, what he's indicating is that VAWEP, the Violence Against Women's Education Project Planning Committee, will have the responsibility for most of the remaining projects. However, there are other ongoing concerns, as he has indicated. And that's kind of what I want to see if we couldn't add something to the motion, and that is that we do need to come up with a process. We do need to make sure that issues that arise in this area are taken care of in a smooth transition and that they have an appropriate place to go. And so I'd like to add to the motion, if it's okay, that ENP could be the person or the entity responsible to meet with the leadership of VAWEP, to meet with the leadership from Family and Juve. And I would suggest that our new council member, Judge Dean Stout, be involved in that so that we can quickly come up with what that appropriate process is and quickly come up with who the appropriate group is to hear these different issues and to make sure that they get heard in the appropriate committee and that they're vetted by the appropriate group so that they can come back to the council for decision. So that's my request to add something to that motion to have ENP immediately expedite that process. And again, Judge Kaye, thank you for all that you do.
Thank you.
So, Justice Miller, you're asking to add what I consider number four to the three recommendations, and that number four is that E&P be responsible for meeting with the leadership of VAWEP and Family Juvenile Advisory Committee to address the continuing processes and issues involving domestic violence?
Yes.
And also, I understand, but this wouldn't be part of the motion, that you're requesting Presiding Judge Dean Stout to be integral to that that relationship. I see.
I would like to include him since he's been chair of Family and Juve for so many years and is so well knowledgeable about the intricacies of the different committees, and he would be someone who would provide, I think, great knowledge about what the process should be.
Understood. Thank you.
I'm sure it's not up to me, but he is perfect for it.
Thank you.
You had us at when they first mentioned Dean Stout, clarifying that. Commissioner Alexander.
I'm kind of following up on what Justice Miller said. My concern about this was I'm not clear who VAWEP reports to if there's no task force.
My understanding is that they report to the FAMJU Advisory Committee, the co-chairs of whom appoint the members of VAWEP. They do not report either to the Judicial Council or the Chief Justice directly, at least.
And I see Presiding Judge Stout nodding that's yes. The process.
And so my concern was about the other areas, such as criminal and probate and the tribal court forum or whatever it's called, because one of the things about domestic violence is it does cross all these subject matter areas. And so my concern about not having the task force is that if you put everything under FAMJUV, then there's the issues that have to do with criminal and elder abuse and the interplay between the tribes and the courts that I'm afraid is going to get lost. So I'm not sure if something should be added to the process or what to figure out how to include all of those entities in this discussion that Justice Miller is relating with E&P.
Jody Patel?
Justice Miller, I think, can address that.
Justice Miller?
Yeah. Commissioner Alexander, the issue you raised is exactly what E&P and Rupert have been talking about with many of these different issues involving the task forces and advisory committees, and there is a great deal of crossover, and one of the things that we've wanted to do is to make sure that issues don't get lost, and we were finding that one group was dealing with one and another, and then some had combined subcommittees, and there wasn't any clear direction as to how they should proceed and how they should bring that to the council and how they should make sure that all of the issues are taken care of by the different entities that have tentacles in them. And so that's exactly what I want to add to this in my motion, to add this fourth process, which will set up that and make sure that this important issue doesn't get lost. It may be setting up joint subcommittees. It may be putting together different groups in some way. But we need to talk about it and come up with that process.
But I think the chief, when she was trying to write down what you were proposing, said FAM and JUV, and I'm not sure it shouldn't be expanded.
I understood the two.
You know what?
VAWEP and FAM and JUV.
And in the process, as we discussed, we may decide that there are other groups we need to bring in that discussion. I was just saying at the beginning, that's the logical place to start with the leadership of those groups. But then we may have to bring in others to come up with appropriate subcommittees in their groups to deal with this. I agree.
And so
I'm not foreclosing anything.
Okay. Judge D'Alba.
Thank you, Chief. Justice Kay, thank you for all your good work, sir.
Thank you.
Having spent 22 years at the California State Attorney General's office before I was appointed judge, I remember the discussions about domestic violence and particularly the Attorney General's report of 2009 and the recommendations and the observations and the criticisms that were contained in the report about the shortcomings of the criminal justice system and basically not enforcing law or providing protection to women, children, and victims of domestic violence generally. And I have to say the name of the lady who was behind that report, you may know her, Kathy Jett. She was with the State Attorney General's Office of Crime and Violence Prevention. She's still in Sacramento about. But she has been a fabulous advocate and had been throughout her career on these issues and was the genesis behind this report in 2005 to begin with. One of the things that I observed as judge in my short career as judge with respect to firearms and these questions of criminal protective orders, EPOs that we all as judges issue all the time, and domestic violence cases that come before the courts, was about firearms and the relinquishment of firearms and obviously the volatile situations that we as judges have to address, and particularly when there's firearms involved. And what I noted and still see, even from this report, is that only half of our courts in the state, this report says 30 courts in our state, are linked or have access to the California Courts Protective Order Registry. And I think it's probably about the same or less with respect to access and entry of these various firearm relinquishment orders into the CLETS system. So we here in the judiciary have great ideas. We have wonderful forms. Laws get enacted, and we make orders intending to protect people and stop violence, etc. But those pieces of paper and those orders don't get out of the courthouse for the most part. And as your report says, it's not uncommon that a department in one court in one county issue an order and a department in that same county not even know anything about
correct
the particular order that the judge down the hall or in the other courthouse in the south part of the county issued, much less law enforcement knowing about an order that was issued next door, in the county next door, or in another part of the state. So as much good work that has happened over these various years, the last couple decades in this area, you know, unless we, and I don't know, maybe the branch or we as a state or as a community, start engaging. Maybe it's a question of technology. Maybe it's, well, it's always a question of dollars. But it's also a question of getting the justice partners, the sheriffs, the police chiefs at the table to ensure that these things, that our orders are distributed and respected and the like. We have a meeting that we've been trying to get with the Department of Justice on behalf of the tribes, who are passionate about this issue of domestic violence, a meeting with the state attorney general so that the tribes can have access or somehow get their orders. Because right now, tribal courts and judges do and say things, but the local sheriff doesn't know about it. So anyway, it's just an observation comment. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Chief, thank you.
Thank you. I want to say one thing that when... The work of your task force has not been easy. As we know, the solutions have seemed universally acceptable. But it was in the implementation and execution that this task force had hard-fought battles in judicial council to have certain rules passed, because as judges we understood the limitations or the extra requirements on courts that are already overburdened with trying to process these papers and get it to the sheriff. And so I know in 8 years everybody looks fine, but I remember they were hard fought at council and with lots of objections and tabling and continuing the matter and sending it back to you to start over or address some issue, particularly firearms relinquishment, yeah, where no one objected to the policy, but the execution of it and the success was worrisome for judges who are making those orders and the liability concerns. So
indeed.
I just want to say it hasn't been pretty for the last 8 years. I know that this task force has tried to better educate and bring about greater policy changes in California, notwithstanding the willingness of all judges and court staff to do something for public access and safety, but because, it's, again, it was a matter of resources and collaboration when we didn't have the technology to know these things. So I want to commend you on a hard-fought battle for a great cause that we will continue to implement in a different way than using the task force. Justice Hull?
Yes, thank you, Chief. Pardon me, I just wanted to add one small comment to Judge D'Alba's comments. I did serve for some time on the state court, tribal court forum, and the problem that Judge D'Alba refers to is a very real problem for them, not only that their domestic violence orders, restraining orders, whatever they might be, are not known outside of their tribal court, perhaps, but equally important, when they do become known, say, for instance, where a person who has been the subject of domestic violence has a restraining order and they're off tribal lands and some difficulty arises, the next problem is whether or not local state law enforcement authorities feel that those tribal restraining orders are even enforceable by them. And I know there's work going on in that regard, too. It's a very, just another corner of the great issues that Justice Kaye and all of the other advisory committees we've talked about today have to do with, but it also underscores the need for ongoing efforts in all of these regards. Thank you, Justice Kaye.
You know, I'm going to ask Bobby Welling to inform you about something that you may be surprised about that you may not know.
The current status of tribal court orders, is, in my understanding, is as follows. The tribal court judges and courts have read-only access to CCPOR as of this time. They can also file their orders with a state court in the same geographic area, and those orders will be transmitted to CLETS. My understanding from the CCPOR staff is that the impediment to full access to CCPOR is really at this point in the Department of Justice because of long-standing security concerns that they have. But because of the great work of the forum, meetings are happening to discuss this and to try to partner with the Department of Justice to get this situation alleviated. And it is certainly CCPOR, there is no impediment other than the security concerns of the Department of Justice, and would welcome the tribal courts. A tribal court judge and a tribal court advocate do serve on VAWEP, and there is funding from the grant that supports domestic violence education and other work for the tribal court judges. So that's just a little bit more background on that issue.
Thank you. That's helpful. First, Judge Jacobson, then Judge McCabe.
In my time on the bench, going back to 2005, as it turns out, I've dealt with domestic violence pretty much in every assignment that I've had, either as a criminal calendar judge, as a family law judge, or also as an ancillary assignment doing simply DV cases. And what I've been aware of the whole time, and Commissioner Alexander and I have had many conversations over the years on these topics, is that there are parallel tracks that exist and with slightly different sets of rules and various problems that occur in regard to that. And so if you're simply doing domestic violence cases, one of the things that you see commonly are people seeking to use that process to get an edge in a pending family court matter with, say, child custody situations. If there's a criminal case going on, you rarely, and it may, this may be simply my county or maybe a much more common experience, you don't have very much information about what's going on the family court side. We have a system where if a criminal protective order is imposed restraining the defendant, the defendant actually has control over when that order terminates. In other words, if that person is successful on probation, they could petition to end probation, to terminate probation early. There's no requirement of notice to the protected person in that context. And so people are encouraged to also seek sort of the civil domestic violence restraining order at the same time to give the petitioner some control over the process. But there are absolute communication gaps. There are different sets of rules. If we talk about firearm relinquishment, for example, in the civil context, you can make that court order and go forward with that. In the criminal context, Fifth Amendment issues apply, and right to counsel. And so the court getting involved there, it almost becomes the court almost acting as a prosecutor in that relinquishment process. So it occurs to me, and has occurred to me over a long period of time, that this is something that needs a more comprehensive fix, probably at the legislative level. Having said that, looking at these recommendations, including Justice Miller's fourth recommendation, I think this is certainly a step in a positive direction. I'm going to make a motion to approve the recommendations with Judge Miller's fourth. I also want to personally thank Justice Kay, because in my judicial career, I've benefited greatly from the judicial education that you've had a great hand in providing. And so that's my motion.
Motion to approve all four recommendations. Judge McCabe.
All right. Yeah, thank you. Procedurally, I thought Justice Miller had made an amending motion. However, if that's not recognized and Judge Jacobson's motion is standing, I will second it.
Okay, so let's do the parliamentary procedure aspect. All those in favor of adding recommendation number four, please say aye.
Did we have a previous motion? I didn't think we did.
We didn't.
I did not hear Justice Miller make a motion.
I'll make that motion.
And I'll second it.
I will as well.
Okay, so there's a motion to add a recommendation number four by Justice Miller, seconded by Judge McCabe and Judge Jacobson. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Now we have four recommendations, and I understood Judge Jacobson to be making the motion to move all four recommendations, and Judge McCabe is the second.
And correct. And just a little more is, first, I'd like to congratulate Justice Kay, Ms. Nunn, Ms. Welling on their work in the embryonic stages of really this silent and unseen and unrecognized area of the law. It was really ignored by society for generations, really not dealt with adequately. And so I commend those who were on the ground floor of recognizing an area that really cuts a wide swath across all these areas of law. So you're to be commended for your work, recognizing that this is committee is folding into FAMJU now, and your work's not done. This will go on for a lifetime. And then, two, I'd like to note that the addition, as pointed out by Justice Miller, is quite appropriate since that EMP is going through the consolidation of committees, putting them in where they think that there's a natural fit. And so it just makes a lot of sense to me to see it go through EMP so that they can continue that process without any hitches. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Judge McCabe. See no more hands raised. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Matters are approved. Thank you again, Justice Kay, Bobby, and Diane. Thank you.
Thank you all.
I'm going to stand in recess for our half an hour lunch. We'll reconvene at 12:35.